What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So, what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Popcorn, put on your comfiest pajamas and grab a drink because it's time for a new episode of Sierra Unfiltered. All right, hello everyone and welcome back to another episode of Sierra Unfiltered. We have our first guest and it's an iconic guest. We have Patrick Starr here.
Hi.
What the heck? How are we here?
You tell me. y'all tell me how we're here. There was a little video scattered on the internet of you two, and I did a live.
Yeah.
Regarding BC. Not before Christ, but
I mean,
BeautyCon. And I was really passionate, and I felt for you and what you guys went through. And I did a live, a little live on my Instagram, and we had FaceTimes right after.
Yeah, which was crazy.
I think because our mutual fans were like, oh my God, Patrick's. Was that the case?
Oh, yeah. Well, I actually noticed before you went on live because you tweeted out my and Skylar's Instagram profiles, and my DMs were like, girl.
Because I was like, yeah, follow these two queens, support them. Okay, oh my gosh.
And I was freaking out, and I was like, all of my DMs were like, girl, like, DM Patrick Starr. Like, he is talking about you. Mm-hmm. And then you went on live, like, a few hours later, and then we set this up, and...
But it was so funny is that your videos were already populating on my page.
Oh, really?
Because you were doing these outfit trends, your Disney video, you're recreating My Life as Ava, and then... I was already watching you that week.
That's
and
it
just so happened to you guys we had met. So
yeah.
And so it's fun. So awesome. I mean, and what I feel like this is like the perfect example of like turning lemons into lemonade. Like, not necessarily the best situation to like have met under, but I feel like it's kind of a bonding thing of like us all wanting to be more inclusive and us all wanting to like promote like a positive environment and like work towards better solutions. Cause I think it came out of us all wanting better.
Right.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Well, and what I just thought was the coolest thing was that, like, there are so many people who reach the level of success that you have and then kind of forget why they started, right? And why they wanted to spread that message and why they wanted to be more inclusive. So to have someone like you who's reached that level of success, then, like, reach down to the little guy and be like, hey, like, I care. Like, I care about... inclusivity. Yeah. I care about equal treatment and I care about like my story. Mm-hmm. That was like it was a really cool thing to see. And kind of, I think BeautyCon left me feeling a little bit crushed about the community. Mm-hmm. And then I think having you reach out was me being like, oh wait, that is such a small segment of the beauty community. There are so many amazing voices and experiences in the beauty community. And so it was just really cool to see you stand up for me like that.
Thanks.
Well, and I think it's cool too, because even when we were there, like, even like the red carpet experience was something that like Sierra had a really hard time with. And so I think it's hard because you see like all these like amazing people walking the red carpet and having this great experience. Mm-hmm. And you just automatically assume like people are getting meet and greets, people are getting this amazing treatment, and they aren't aware that this injustice is happening. Mm-hmm. So it's really cool to find out that like you're aware and people are aware and that people are like willing to stick up for other people. Mm-hmm. Like, I think that's such a big thing.
I felt so bad to begin with, but even before, so I think this maternal instinct side of me has kicked in just this year, because, you know, being on social media, it's about you, it's about your channel, it's about your Instagram, your Snapchat, your business, your brand, like, who are you? You're shaping your identity. But then I think as I've matured in this industry over the years that I've been on YouTube and being specifically somebody in the industry to beauty, yeah. where we are connecting with our fans, and we and us as beauty influencers or gurus have this direct following or direct consumer of mm-hmm. beauty, we have to gain their trust. And so a consumer of beauty or an attendee of BeautyCon is no mm-hmm. different. And so if okay. I'm here with my platform and my visibility promoting something, it still ends up on me. It's yeah. not on BeautyCon. It's not on the founder or the staff. It's on me because I've been a part of that. I'm in the reel.
Yeah.
I'm on the feed. Yeah. So, and for me to have gone for so many years, you know, I just want to make sure that everything is done right and with my name attached. Yeah. But also furthermore, having also been a newer manager to younger influencers, I feel for these people.
Yeah. Yeah.
First of all, I've been through what they've been through mm-hmm. and growing. I've done pretty much every sort of campaign, large and small, yeah. internationally, to a little post, to a little mention, and conventions and attending, and also having been yeah. Sponsored to go to these events too. So with that being said, I don't want to look like I've lost myself, because yeah. I think, you know, you kind of have to play the game to change the game,
yeah.
and to make the game. And that's where I feel like I'm at now, is that with my voice and with my humility and connection with my community, like even like this, I'm able to kind of bring awareness and visibility to those that don't have the power or the voice to do so. That's why yeah. I thought even my Instagram Live was so important,
yeah.
Because I felt even if I had met, you know, the staff or the founder yeah. of BeautyCon or whatever, it wouldn't have made much of an impact than just saying it on my own, on my terms.
Yeah. I feel like two things you said were very important. I feel like, first of all, recognizing that we're talking about the beauty industry.
Yeah.
And I think with that comes so many stigmas of, like, what beauty is. Mm-hmm. Like, this is a convention for beauty, you
right.
know? And beauty can mean so many different things to different people. But I think, at the end of the day, at least my opinion, is like beauty is making yourself feel the most confident mm-hmm. and like expressing yourself. Mm-hmm. And beauty isn't like conforming to one ideal of beauty. And I think that's like a very 2019 idea. And so it's hard sometimes to see people just promoting one thing of like, this is what beauty is. This is what a body looks like. This is how you paint your face. And so I think like what you're trying to do and what so many other wonderful creators are trying to do and what BeautyCon should be trying to celebrate is our differences mm-hmm. and how everyone chooses to express themselves. Like, I feel like mm-hmm. that was my favorite part of the whole day, was seeing people coming out in these like crazy, amazing, beautiful outfits, or having like insane rainbow eye looks, or, you know, right. things that are just true to themselves. And so I feel like by lifting up smaller creators or lifting up more diverse creators or people who aren't just this like traditional idea of what beauty is, I feel like you're helping promote right. what we want beauty to be.
And, yeah. and I won't disregard their message, because that's what they have done.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But the issue to highlight is that they did not logistically
yeah.
handle the, right. the way things went.
Exactly.
And I think it's bigger than one event. It's bigger than like one experience. Like, it really is an issue in the wider community as a whole, and not even just the beauty community, but like the freaking world. Like, yeah.
well, or even the YouTube community, yeah. mm-hmm. like traditional media.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So, what were your experiences like going? You know what? Actually, before we get into like mm-hmm. the meat of the episode, mm-hmm. let's do our hot takes.
Okay.
Because this is like, I think there's so much to go into. But before we do that, we gotta give our hot takes. So, Skylar, do you want to go first?
Oh, sure. I always feel nervous going first, but I'll go first. So I think my hot take this week is, and I don't know if either of you agree, if you disagree, I feel like shapewear is like a personal choice. I think that a lot of times shapewear is viewed as like a not body positive thing, because you're trying to like shrink yourself, you're trying to do this, that, and the other. But I think a lot of times shapewear can just be like to avoid chub rub, or like yeah. to make sure you don't see like your belly button through a dress. Or like, I think that people shouldn't feel pressured to wear shapewear, but I also don't think that it should be like a stigmatized thing of like, Kim Kardashian just came out with her recent launch and it's like very inclusive, very wonderful. Like, I think that shapewear doesn't just have to automatically be like waist trainers. I think it can be like whatever you're comfortable with. And mm-hmm. it doesn't have to be an emphasis on like shrinking your body. It can be just an emphasis on like feeling the most comfortable, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah. I mean, I fully agree with that. And I think something I've struggled with for a while is like, it feels like it has to be one or the other. Either I like take a strong stance against like shapewear and mm-hmm. be like, no, like I don't wear Spanx. But like the reality is sometimes I want to wear Spanx. Mm-hmm. Like sometimes yeah. if I'm wearing a tight fitting skirt or just like you said, don't want my thighs rubbing together, it's just easier to wear shapewear.
Yeah.
But then on the other side, I have seen comments on my channel and on my Instagram that are like, oh, you really should have worn Spanx with this outfit. And I'm like, mm-hmm. but why? Like, why? What's the problem with like my stomach not being compressed? What's mm-hmm. the problem with like me not having an hourglass shape? Like, there's no problem with that either way.
Yeah.
I just feel like it's one of those things that's like, you know what? It's not hurting anyone else.
To each their own. To each their own.
I'm the same exact way. If you're not hurting anyone else, just yeah. keep it to yourself, you know? If there is obviously like ethics and morals and someone is causing harm to somebody else,
yeah.
then just shut the hell up. Yeah. You know what I mean?
I mean, if you're buying them from like unethical companies or anything, yeah, that's a whole totally different thing. But I feel like it's the same with like cosmetic surgery. It's the same with anything mm-hmm. of like if you want to dye your hair, if you want yeah. to like wear makeup, like if it makes you feel comfortable and confident, I don't think anyone should have kind of a say in what other people
right.
do.
Like, right. This is not my hair. I mean, I don't know if you yeah. guys know. This is a wig. I'm fully bald on this wig. But I chose to my girls today. Yeah. I don't think it's any different than what you eat, than what you wear. And I think if it's a form of self-expression, if we're talking about shapewear, cosmetics is the same thing. Yeah. A haircut is the same thing.
Yeah.
We're not altering. We're just enhancing what we love at our discretion, you know, with our own personal choice.
Right.
And our own will.
And, like, who am I to tell someone just because I don't like to wear shapewear, I wouldn't get a nose job? Who am I to tell someone else mm-hmm. that them doing that is wrong? Mm-hmm. Like, that's
yeah.
not...
Yeah, but, of course, when it comes down to something so extreme where it is damaging one's health,
yeah.
let's
yeah.
say, like, an eating disorder or mental health mm-hmm. or body dysmorphia or depression, and you yeah. feel like one, whether it's your friend or a family member that needs help, then I feel like then it's the right time to step in. But totally. if they're expressing themselves without any harm, self-harm, yeah. then I think it's just fine.
Well, especially I feel like shapewear sometimes gets lumped into like the whole waist trainer, like weight loss shake, fit tea mm-hmm. culture. And I feel like sometimes it's just not that deep. Mm-hmm. I feel like sometimes yeah. it's like I'm gonna be working topical. like when we were at BeautyCon, it was like a 12 something hour day, and I just didn't want my legs to rub together. And I didn't want to like worry about like putting deodorant right. or whatever, mm-hmm. you
yeah.
know.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
so that's my hot take.
Patrick, do you want to give your hot take?
I had two.
Okay.
So well,
give them both.
Give them both.
Wait, which one did you want? Did you want the first one or did you like the second?
I think do both.
I say do both.
I mean, this okay. is a whole conversation. Yeah. So.
Well, so my first one was gender identity and yeah. just, I guess, learning about it. Because
mm-hmm.
me as a gay man, like there's so much more identities than there yeah. was before, pronouns that were before.
Mm-hmm.
So I think for me to learn about them and just take the time to ask, because I think, especially with, I guess, specifically men, like cis men that yeah. are heterosexual, that are uncomfortable, like
mm-hmm.
don't bully or don't, yes. you know, if you were to explain, you mm-hmm. know, to people, then I really admire husbands or boyfriends that respect me, like when I'm going yeah. on these brand trips, because I think growing up, this stems from like a you know, my childhood, but because I've grown up with being bullied by straight mm-hmm. men, by athletes, like in middle school and high school, like I've grouped that sort of male totally. Figure out of my yeah. comfort zone. And then when I've gone and grown into this beauty community and I'm on these brand trips, I'm so freaking scared to be talking to anybody's husband or boyfriend yeah. because they would probably think that I'm onto them or that I'm too gay or too flamboyant.
Yeah.
But yet, if I were to flex about my business or talk about entrepreneurship, then it or tech,
yeah.
then I kind of gain some respect. But totally. I saw your husband follows me, so I'm like, wow, that's kind of cool that you or maybe had taken the time to explain to him who I was. Yeah. Because obviously, I don't think someone like him, Stephen, right?
Yes, yeah, Stephen.
Would know about someone like me right. off the fly without someone like you explaining.
Yeah.
So it's just kind of like enlightening, but for you to have explained the time shows the amount of respect that I have for you, but also for someone like him.
Well, thank you.
And also with Kyle. Yeah. So I think it's just really, really cool. So, yeah.
Well, I think that kind of idea of like, because I do that same thing of like, all these like straight, kind of like manly men won't understand this industry, won't understand diverse identities, won't understand different viewpoints.
Sorry to interrupt you. I was going to say, even all the time, people will say, like, other people from a more traditional industry will be like, oh, your wife just sits and talks to a camera all day? Like, what does she do for money? Like, that's so nice that you let her do that. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, for both, I mean, for me, working for Sierra, I feel like it's even harder to explain. Mm-hmm. Like, not only is, like, YouTube so hard to explain, but the fact that, like, mm-hmm. I work for a YouTuber.
Yeah, the overall umbrella is that, like, you only are comfortable with what you know.
Yeah.
And with whatever topic, you're only comfortable with what you know. And then when you're presented with something that you're uncomfortable not knowing, it's like school or like a puzzle or like a game. Yes. You like want to know and you want to crack the code.
Totally.
And people that are uncomfortable about it should just take the time to learn and ask questions.
And with all the resources, free resources on the internet right now, I feel like it's our responsibility as like global citizens to like educate ourselves about other identities, educate ourselves about other perspectives. Like, you know, when I was growing up in middle school and high school, there was only, you know, he and her pronouns that people used. I wasn't taught about that in school, but
that's what we grew up knowing.
Right, exactly. And you can
like boys in trucks and dolls with girls.
Exactly.
Yeah. You know? So.
Well, and I feel like what you just said is so true of, I feel like people aren't codes to be cracked. Like I feel like it's so easy if you're like a grandparent or you're someone who's like so used to like, this is guys and this is girls, and it's like an A box and a B box, just to like kind of sort everyone in and associate. Like, my husband hates sports. My husband only likes theater. My husband has like no interest in anything that's like traditionally masculine. Mm-hmm. Like, he's just kind of like has more feminine interests. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like it's so easy to just be like, oh, but like he's a guy and he's like married to a woman and it's this, that, and the other. And I feel like most people aren't just like A or B. I feel like there's always, like, you need to take the time as a human to learn who people are and shouldn't just be like walking around trying to categorize people.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, it's similar to technology too. Like, we have phones where you can like literally see someone on the other side, you know, when that was like, that's fake, you know,
totally.
Like back in the 80s and 90s and even 2000s. And now we have the technology and capability to do so. But us as people and humans have adapted and been progressive, and that's life. And I think
we need to keep adapting and keep
adapting when it comes to identities too. So that's.
Yeah. Agree. Snaps
all around.
What was your second hot take?
Oh my! It was so funny when I said these two words. You both were like, "Oh, yes.
You gotta do it."
I had said beauty egos.
Yes.
Yeah, I think for me, it's hard to find humility when you're trying to grow your channel from the culture that I've come from when I started in this industry, or when it wasn't even an industry, it was just a hobby that turned into a multi-billion-dollar industry. But it's crazy because you want to stand out, you want to get your name out there, you want to be confident, you want to be like your own. But then sometimes a little bit of that humility and that groundedness goes away, because you keep stomping and marching to the beat of your own drum so loud, you can't hear anybody else, you know? So
I think I have to be careful that I don't fall into this too, but it's like there's a difference between like confidence and standing your own and like not being a nice person. Mm-hmm. Like, you can be both.
Right.
And I think that ego is where you switch over from being confident and sure of yourself to being like not a nice person.
Right.
And I think that's why it's hard, because if you don't stand your own and you're not confident, you will get walked all over in this industry.
Right. Right.
And you have to walk that line of like, I know my value. I'm not going to let brands or, you know, companies take advantage of me. Mm. But also, like, being humble still. Mm-hmm. And it's so hard. I feel like I'm still trying to figure out that mm-hmm. balance where a lot of the comments on that BeautyCon vlog are like, you shouldn't have let people walk all over you. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, but I didn't want to have that yeah. ego. But mm-hmm. then you kind of have to. And how do you balance that?
I think for me, the way that I look at all the qualities that make me who I am as an influencer. So I have my voice. I have my production quality, my production value. I have the topics of my content. I have my supporting ventures of credibility that can allow me to speak to being someone that is credible and authoritative in this industry. So it's like, where I have all these muscles, right?
Yeah.
Of Patrick Starr. Where can I flex and where can I be a humble ass bitch? You know, where can I stay in my lane? And so for me, if it's just me being silly or stupid and lip singing in a video or dancing, yeah. then it's fine. But I'm on the red carpet on one day, like in three red carpets in a day,
yeah.
or like, you know, on an interview, or even, I think also too, like in my stories, there's like a sense of humility when it comes to like on my stories. I'm taking off my wig, I'm shaving my head, we're
yeah.
kiki, we're at the club. And I think just also interacting with people, like how is your energy?
Right.
So, but if you are trying to flex all your muscles, if you're watching, you want to be an influencer and you're flexing here, you look like a stiff ass bitch and you're just like, you just look mm-hmm. so stiff and your aura is not there.
Yeah, right.
Well, and especially I feel like nowadays the trend on YouTube is to be real and to be honest mm-hmm. and raw. And I feel like people are falling in love with the person behind the camera mm-hmm. and not always the content. Like, correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel like when I was on YouTube, like watching as a viewer back in the day, the beauty industry was like, how to do the best brown smoky eye, mm-hmm. like how to contour, because we all were learning these basics because we grew up using like drugstore makeup right. and it was like, we all learned together. But now that everyone has that skill set, I feel like it's about like showing your personality and being creative
right.
And I feel like you don't have to be the most beautiful person to be a beauty influencer now, or mm-hmm. traditionally beautiful person.
Yeah.
You know, and I think back in the day, it was hard because it was kind of started by, oh, that girl's really pretty, or that guy's really pretty, and I want to look like them, mm-hmm. and I want to do my contouring like them, or, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so I feel like transitioning out of that and like becoming more real and showing your authentic self, whether that's on your stories or a vlog channel or even on your main channel, I feel like is so crucial
right.
to succeeding in the industry now. And so I feel like people just need to like get on it.
Yeah.
Which
it's
love.
It's really hard.
I love that's becoming what people want to see.
Yeah.
In that, like, I mean, when I started YouTube, when did you start?
2013.
Mm-hmm. I started in 2015.
Mm-hmm.
So only a little bit after you.
Mm-hmm.
And when I started, it was like the era of like oversaturation, sweeping shots, room tour, morning routine, that kind of just like perfected, crafted life.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of felt like that's what I had to do and that's what I had to fit into.
That was the starter pack.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally. Well, it was like very the Tumblr era of like, I'm like, My Life as Ava made that video. Literally,
mm-hmm.
my life is kind of like a parody of it all.
Mm-hmm.
Of that's what it was
right.
like how to be the most aspirational person you could be.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
so it's so cool that now it's turning around and it's like how to be real and how
mm-hmm.
like people want to relate to you and
yeah.
people want to like see your struggles because everyone has struggles.
Mm-hmm.
And
but also on the other side of things, it's like when you're too like in the raw,
yeah.
do brands want to buy into that?
Yeah,
that's the other balance.
That's the ticket.
Like, is you know, because the brand is, let's say they're it's a beauty brand and they're
yes.
at a higher price point and they're it's a prestige brand
yes.
wanting to partner with your channel.
Right.
This is influencer talk. You know, like
no.
are you as brandable because you're so in the raw, like on the ground chewing
oh.
the grass? You
yeah.
know, like
100%.
And you have to balance like how much of your personal life do you want to share?
Right.
Because
mm-hmm.
there's a difference between being open and being real and like given a little too much.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like, you know,
there's a difference between showing your boyfriend on like a vlog channel versus doing a boyfriend challenge or like a boyfriend tag with
mm-hmm.
your boyfriend. And neither of those are better or worse than the other, but I feel like every little decision is a decision that you have to make.
Yeah.
As to like how comfortable you are
yeah.
and how much you want to share.
Well, mm-hmm. like for me, if I'm having like, I've made a few videos where I'm like talking about how I had a bad day and how I like overcame that and, you know, got into a more body positive headspace. And I think for me, it's been like balancing being honest about where I'm at, like in loving myself, and like not filming myself like crying and having a breakdown. Mm-hmm. Like you maybe can just like talk about the experience and you don't have to show everything. Because right. I think that's when you cross into that territory of like maybe brands and even viewers are like a little bit put off
right.
by showing too much.
Right.
Well, and I think if you just show like when you're feeling those extreme emotions and there's no like aftershock of like, hey, this is why it's a teachable moment. I went through X, Y, and Z. Mm-hmm. Yes, I showed you this clip of me crying, mm-hmm. but that's how I was feeling in the moment. Let's mm-hmm. talk about it versus...
I think that's so much more healthy because then yeah. I think there's so much responsibility for the viewer to have a say. And that's when it gets out of control because then I think you as a viewer are seeking help. And then, you know, it becomes this... Yeah. This incredible dialogue between you and, you know, who is the professional or who is dictating your mental health at that yeah. point. But it's all, yeah. you know, subjective to yeah. who it's for.
How has it been for you being like a mentor and a manager to mm-hmm. like younger creators? Do they ever come to you with those things of like, hey, is this okay to post?
Yeah.
And how is it trying to balance like, you know your brand and you know your limitations for what you want to put mm-hmm. on like the Patrick Star channel, mm-hmm. but for managing, I don't know how many people you manage mm-hmm. or mentor mm-hmm. of like 10 other people's mm-hmm. like, I know your personal brand and that's all right for you, but maybe mm-hmm. not for you.
Right. I learned this from another executive at a prestige brand. Just a few weeks ago, I had attended an event and we were just talking. She was out, she's works on product development and, you know, obviously I'm an influencer and I say, how do you choose your team? And she told me, you know, when I'm choosing an executive level team, I'm not just looking at the IQ. I'm looking at the EQ. I'm looking at the emotional qualities mm-hmm. that person has. And so I have to see, yeah, I mean, obviously you have been friends for over 10 years.
Yeah. Right.
So you guys have already this EQ that you guys line up.
Totally.
And so for me and my Patrick Star team and for me and my clients and the people that I'm representing, I look at them, I check their aura, I check their energy and really take a look in their eye and see if their EQ lines up with mine.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, and if it doesn't, I wouldn't have signed them in the first place.
Yeah.
So for me to check that, of course, that like last week, one of my clients called me and was like, oh my God, my landlord wants to look at my place without my permission. And I'm like, is this about a brand deal or is this just yeah. like, I'm like, okay, there's a lot going on. Let me just talk to you girls. So I just took the call, calmed them down. And we were just like, you know, it's personal. I'm like a big sister, big brother to them.
Yeah.
So, and for me to navigate them in this industry, it makes me feel better because I never had someone like that.
Yeah.
But if I can be teachable in this industry or help them and guide them, I think as a whole, people will not just speak highly of me, but highly about the industry and yeah. where it's going because there are people like me paving the way because I've done it all. You yeah. know, I haven't done it all, but I've done most from a business standpoint in beauty, in yeah. the digital space. Yeah.
And I feel like that kind of transitions into your hot take.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Okay, so my hot take is that YouTube is not a competition and we do not need to be comparing ourselves or competing against each other because there is more than enough room for everyone online. And, you know, I think there is especially this idea in people who make the same, like similar content where, you know, they feel maybe intimidated by like someone else coming into that space, yeah. doing similar content. Are they gonna steal my subscribers or steal my viewers? But the reality is the more viewers on the platform, the better. Mm-hmm. Like if another creator who's making similar content to me brings someone new on the site, that's great for me because then mm-hmm. they might watch my content. And mm-hmm. you know, just because someone is a fan of mine and a fan of someone else's, it doesn't mean they're like stealing subscribers or stealing mm-hmm. viewers. Like people watch so many different things on the internet. Mm-hmm. And I mean, even just from like a practical influencer analytical standpoint, if I make a video, let's say I made a video about like wearing this exact outfit that you're wearing, and then you made a video in the same outfit and we use similar titles, our videos are gonna get recommended off of each other. It's probably gonna drive viewership for mm-hmm. both of our videos. And yeah. so I don't really get the like competitive aspect mm-hmm. of YouTube because I'm like, we can all succeed. There's room for everyone.
There's something like, I could almost disagree, but also agree at the same time, because that's the aspirational part of, of what our ideal would be for what we want the industry to be. But I think as some viewers out there, when you were saying this, was like, hell no, she is published. But, you know, I think if you were to have done that concept of wearing the same thing and then, you know, whatever, people would be comparing us and making it a competition between
us. Do you think so? Yeah. Like the viewers make, they make the competition?
They control the narrative and be like, oh, she's stealing off him and she's not crediting. So then it becomes, again, where do we pass the baton, you know, to who's to control the narrative?
I agree with that. I think as long as you're crediting the original person, I think that's where it becomes, because for me, it's like, so I have a really good friend on YouTube named Carrie Dayton, and she and I make similar content. And I think a lot of people would think that we would be competitive, but in reality, and I think this, you hit the nail on the head, it's about the subscribers. Our subscribers, like, love when we collaborate. And they, like, if I do a video on something or Carrie does a video, all the viewers will come to the other person's channel and be like, hey, I'd love to see your perspective on, like, this same thing that the other person did. And I think the reason I have such a positive mindset about it is because our subscribers don't compare us. They, like, kind of collab mate. They are kind of the reason that, like, we became friends. But I think it does get into that messy area when it's
I think especially because makeup is kind of a separate art form. I think it's different when you're talking about, like, recreating a makeup look. Like, if you did, like, a beautiful, I don't know. Like, if you put, like, eyes right here. And, like, I know that's been done a million times. But then if you were the first person to ever do that, and then the next day your direct competitor did the exact same thing and didn't mention you and just saw that that was, like, going off, I feel like that's not okay. I feel like it gets a little looser when it's, like, overarching trends of, like, everyone was doing the, like, I ordered what the person in front of me ordered challenge. So we did, like, I bought the same clothes as the person in front of me. So it's still, like, working on the trend, going with what people want to see, but it's a new perspective. And also it's giving credit to the people who did it before, saying, I've seen X, Y, and Z do this before. I want to put my perspective in.
How do you balance that? Like,
well, I was going to say before, like, it's in our nature to, as the viewer or to have the audience control the narrative. It's in our nature. Because if you look, when we were growing up, there was Britney and Christina.
Totally.
We still do it. You know? Britney's 100%. Now in Vegas. Christina's in Vegas now. She's stealing her. You know, we had NSYNC and Backstreet Boys. Were they intentionally made to compete? No, they were made to sell records and make the record label money. But in our minds as viewers, we're like, are you Backstreet Boys or NSYNC?
Even like like Nicki Minaj posted that tweet the other day saying she was retiring, everyone was like, oh, is it because of Cardi B doing this? Is it because of so-and-so doing this? It's people love to pit each other.
It's in our nature.
That's such an interesting perspective. I didn't even think about when I came up with that hot take.
Going back to what we said before, we only go with what we know, and that's what we grew up knowing. You know?
So, how do we get past that, like, let's pit everyone against each other and, like, let's inspire each other and credit each other? And
What I was gonna say earlier when you started, like, is it a competition? It shouldn't be a competition. There's room for everyone. I think people need to hear that to kind of light their ass, you know, to get their career jump started. Like, man, I could do this, this, and that. But at the end of the day, you're waking your ass up yourself. You're going to the restroom, you're picking up that camera, you're creating the content and editing your stuff. At the end of the day, the competition is not with others.
It's with yourself.
It's within yourself. It's so cliche, but that's what I was doing when I started. I started, you know, making content for myself, and then I was, you know, seeing other people do it, and there was no other boys, and then I became friends with Manny, and we were like, oh, we were inspiring each other. And then we had done so many meet and greets together, and then I was like, okay, let's do it. And then we started doing it. And then, you know, at the end of the day, I was like, no one else is wearing a turban. No one else is Filipino and brown and plus size doing what I do right now that I've seen. And it worked in my favor because I really had my horse blinders on and I just ran with it. And that's how I managed.
Well, and also I feel like to be an both of you correct me if I'm wrong, I feel like to be successful on YouTube, you have to kind of fall into a category. Like, we've met so many amazing people who, like, if you do a balloon animal art, that's amazing and awesome, and you're going to find your audience. But I don't know if that person would ever, like, win a Streamy or be, like, put on a billboard paid for by YouTube. Like, mm-hmm. I feel like YouTube likes to have people kind of in categories of your gaming, your lifestyle, your beauty, your family vlogging, your whatever. But I think the key to succeeding within that niche is to have a why, and to have a why that's different than mm-hmm. anyone else. Of, like you just said, mm-hmm. like, I was the only person wearing a turban. I was the only mm-hmm. person who was Filipino. For Sierra, it was like she was the only lifestyle girl that was mid-size, mm-hmm. you know? And so, like, her first video that really took off was she did a video that was like a curvy lookbook mm-hmm. versus just like a standard lookbook. And all these people were like, oh my gosh, I've never seen someone with my body type like styling clothes and showing it in this format that's so accessible to me. And so I feel like that's what people love, is like people having a why.
The why could only go for so long, because yeah. to the viewer it gets a little bit redundant.
Yeah.
You know, if you have, let's say, if we talk about Rihanna's, you know, just an example, her first album, like SOS, you know, was yeah. like that kind of island girl, like Beats, you know, Sean Paul.
Right.
But you see her transformation over the years. She's done yeah. punk, she's done rock, she's done country. You know, she's yes. done a little bit of everything, and it's prolonged her career. So for me, I call it the hokey pokey.
Yeah.
So I stay within beauty, and yep. then I put my right foot out. Right foot in, left foot out, left foot in, and then I hokey pokey swing it all about whatever happens.
See, we always call that pivoting, but I like hokey pokey way better.
But pivoting is actually, to me, it's a rebrand almost. But doing a hokey pokey
is
coming back to your core.
Yeah.
So for me, when I was baking, it was the phenomenon of baking, and I was piling powder on my face in 2016 when the video started, like 2015, 2016, and I had blown up, and I was like top 10 viewed on Instagram that year in beauty. And then furthermore, I was like, okay, powdering and baking my face is going to go out of style. Everyone's going to bake.
How do you progress so that you... So that's why I like to call it pivoting, because then it's never a full rebrand.
Right.
It's making little tiny adjustments as you go.
Right.
So no one ever looks at you and is like, wow, this was a total 360 from what you were doing. It's like they don't... Right. It's like a frog in boiling water.
Right.
You just change it a little bit.
Right.
No one notices.
Yeah. For me, I was like, okay, let me do makeup on other women. Let me do makeup on white women, on black women, on Asians, on my mom, on my friends. So people can just gain trust, not from just me doing it first person, but third person too.
Yeah.
Well, and I think that's the key, is being open to change, and also like being... not like overly critical on yourself, but looking at like where you can improve and where you can grow. Of like, Sierra used to always sign off her videos with like, love your curves, because like we were talking to like a curvy audience. But now we've changed it to love your body, because everyone has a body, and it's not just about being inclusive towards curvy people. Now it's being inclusive to everyone, you know,
men and women, and you know, thin women and plus size women, and everyone in between. And I think that's really important, is that if you had never looked at those baking videos and been like, okay, baking your face is not going to be the trend forever, if you hadn't taken that step back and looked at your content, you'd probably still be doing the same thing and not have branched out at all.
Right. I think also going back to what you were saying, like being in your niche and staying in your lane, like to do a hokey pokey, like... throw in a mukbang, throw in like a fashion video.
You're so cute. I love that you say hokey pokey.
Yeah, but for me, like I was like, how can Patrick Starr be someone that's so credible? So I got PR, and then I was on the red carpet. But why is he on the red carpet? I don't know, but I'm doing it, bitch. Like, I'm on the red carpet. I look sickening. I'm on with other celebrities. Yeah. Like, you know, it's really cool, and I can gain these relationships and, you know, have them on my channel. And I've had so many celebrities on my channel, but in that case I've garnered more credibility, more visibility for my channel, and just more global recognition for what I've done with my YouTube beyond doing makeup on just myself.
So you have, I feel like, speaking of that, kind of become a celebrity outside of YouTube. How has that transition been like for you, from going to like, I'm just someone who likes to do my makeup and I film it and put it on the internet, to like, I'm hanging out with Kim Kardashian?
It is so crazy, because I literally, because you know, at the end of the day, when I look at myself in the mirror with no makeup, looking like a big old piece of dough, I literally look like a piece of dough. Like, on, like, just when I look at myself, makeup off, bald, no turban, no nothing. And I'm like, okay, it really humbles me.
Yeah, you're like, I'm the same person.
But then like, sometimes if I'm out eating or people are like, oh my God, I've never met a celebrity before. And I'm like, sweet chat, I'm not. I'm just we're eating the same. We are in line, just like you. Yeah. People like, I remember.
Celebrities are just like us.
Yeah, but I'm not like crazy. It's just nice to see that. For me, I don't look at it like I'm a celebrity. I see it for me in my community. Damn, like if someone in the LGBT community is getting recognized and being visible with someone like Kim Kardashian at dinner, then maybe someone after me can have that, and the whole community can be celebrated, because with her global, someone like her with her global visibility alone, the community is winning and being celebrated than rather being shunned upon.
So, which I think, so go ahead.
No, you're totally good.
I was going to say, I think that's so important, because like I grew up seeing one type of beautiful. I never saw someone who looked like me. I never saw someone who looked like you. And I think it's great knowing that like the next generation who's growing up now is seeing people like you be so visible. Mm-hmm. And how, so you have, I think, been a really like inclusive, diverse voice in the beauty industry. How has it been like for you kind of balancing breaking down those beauty standards and beauty norms and also like not compromising who Patrick Starr is?
Mm-hmm. I feel like it's another hokey pokey too for me. If I was to do something out of my element, I think people, I find something that's comfortable for my viewer with what they know, and then I put a little bit of a twist, or I add, like, you know, it's kind of like tricking your kids to eat vegetables.
Yes. Oh my gosh, I love that.
Do you know what I mean? It's literally like that.
What we do all the time.
So you'll just kind of like put a little bit of something new in there. That way, they kind of gain that acquired taste.
Oh my gosh.
You know, for me, when I started my YouTube, I was wearing such big lashes, bottom lashes, white contacts. I was wearing dark cheeks and this. And then I realized, I was like, maybe if I become more attainable in beauty and wear smaller lashes, wear a little bit less makeup, then the female viewer could aspire to bake, or and I would add a little bit of things that that they were familiar with. Okay, we're gonna start with foundation, a little bit of powder, a little bit of bronzer, like just mascara today.
Oh my gosh.
Just became more palatable and digestible for the viewer,
that they could relate to you and they could see someone like you and be like, oh, I understand,
right?
And I can relate. And
for example, my fashion, I behind the scenes, I don't really talk about my fashion a lot, but for me, I'll take a crazy fabric, but I'll put a traditional silhouette on it. So when I'm on the red carpet, people are like, wow, you look so, I don't know what it is, but it's like I have a basic baby doll silhouette, but the fabric is just so ugly.
Yeah.
You know? I remember when I wore to The Lion King, everyone was asking if I was a costume designer, but everyone called me a Tide Pod. I look like a Tide Pod, but it was just the most traditional off-the-shoulder circle skirt silhouette with
just
a turban.
Add something a little bit different.
Yeah, and that was just the textile. That was just the pattern. $5 a yard downtown LA. It was literally so cheap, but everyone, and I threw on the turban, and it looked like an entire look. So for me, whether it's someone that doesn't know who I am or that knows who I am, it's digestible and palatable to the eye.
I love that. That's so interesting that you do that in beauty, because I feel like we do that literally every video. Mm-hmm. Like, we talk about it all the time.
You have to, because sometimes if you're too far, I mean, depending on what your end goal is to get mass recognition, you kind of have to be digestible in that sense.
I mean, that's part of why we started the podcast, is because we wanted to be able to talk about things like body positivity and inclusivity. And we try and do that a little bit in every video, but it's hard because I feel like when you title a video, like a body positive sit down chat, the people who are going to click on that, at least a good majority, are people who are already on that journey and are looking for that content.
Right.
Sometimes the people who need that are like a dad in middle America.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes, you know, like sometimes the person who needs that is someone who's like 70 plus years old and, you know, is just clicking on a random video recommended to them on YouTube.
That looks entertaining and has a fun thumbnail. And then they get a little bit of that body positive message in there in a way that's palatable for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It is so, like you said, like, here, just take a little spoonful of vegetables.
Yeah, but it's for me when I'm literally out on the street and these like macho guys can be like, hey, and I'm like, hi, like, my girlfriend loves your work. Yeah, it's pretty cool. Yeah. I was downtown LA and this guy was like, honk, honk, honk. And I was like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. He's like, hey, my girl likes your stuff. And I was like, Oh my God, thank God. I was like, really, like, yo, can I get a picture? And I'm like, sure, let's take it. And it's just really, really amazing. But I kind of put that in my database, in my R&D, and I say, okay, I'm going to take that and continue what I'm doing. Because if I'm being conversational enough for someone to call their husband or their boyfriend to check my stuff out, then I'm doing something right.
And if that kind of guy probably wouldn't be watching or searching it if you were doing, you know, like you said, how you started with the more out there looks, but because it's a little bit, you know, it's more traditional with a little bit of a spin, it's easier for them to look at someone like you and be like, oh, I get it. And I understand what you're doing with your makeup, and I understand what you're doing with your beauty and all of that, and in a way that they can understand. And then it's helping them to be more inclusive and accepting in their own life as well.
Because as they're watching and digesting, like they're eating, as they're taking it in, they're like, I don't know what it is, but something's clicking. There's a familiar flavor that I see, and that's just is the humility and the diction that I have and the poise. It just comes with your channel.
That's so amazing. Yeah. That's so awesome that you're able to be that person who is kind of an introduction.
Hard, but growing up as like a chubby gay kid, that's I was already doing that innately as a kid, because I really couldn't make friends. But if I said, I can take your pictures, I can, you know, do your makeup, I can teach you piano, I can do this for you, it was kind of like, I can do something for you. And that was the little flavor, because everyone's like, okay, I'll take that.
Yeah.
And then I'll take you too.
Yeah. Also, kind of talking about that, I'm sure you've told this story a million times, but how did you get it? Like, how did you first get into the YouTube world? Because I feel like looking at you now, obviously, you're an amazing makeup artist. Mm-hmm. You are like an amazing on-camera personality, but I feel like equal to that, you're an amazing business person. It seems like you've really built yourself like a wonderful team, a wonderful foundation. Like, you are like starting to mentor people and like manage people, and it feels like you took this like raw passion from an outsider's perspective for like art and photography and makeup and kind of transitioned it into being like the whole package.
Right.
So how did you start on that journey?
Well, for me growing up, I've always loved how things were done. And like, you know, that show How Things Are Made, or like I would watch behind the scenes on the, you know, extended DVDs on the pack, like how theater's done. And I've always been drawn to that. But for me, I've always wanted to be credible. And, you know, my mom instilled, you know, being Filipino and being, you know, she was like, get a diploma, get something so you have something to your name. And now it's a blue check. That's something to her, you know. but growing up, what was that verification that we could have? And so I've always aspired to be, like, you know, I would play dress up at home, or I would pretend to be on American Idol, or I would pretend to be an American Got Talent. But, you know, I would pretend to be on Disney Channel, you know. Like, we were all doing that as kids. But I think for me, as I started to grow my business and my YouTube, I was like, how can I be more credible? Like, treat people with, be professional, email professionally, speak professionally, follow up, be kind. And I think those feel good things create a better business for you at the end of the day.
Yeah.
And for me, how I got started, I was a piano teacher. I was a piano accompanist for theater and behind the scenes.
So are you a theater person?
I am. I'm a Broadway baby girl. Yes. I know, so y'all. I know. Once these are off, we have to like send me a piece. I can sight read in 3 seconds.
Oh my gosh.
I was. That's how I was making money. So I was a piano accompanist, and then I was working at Mac. And I was working at Panera Bread.
So you were hustling.
Yeah, and like next to Panera, there was a bookstore, Barnes & Noble. So then I would just go there in the self-help section and self-improvement and just read books on how to do makeup and hair, and also That's Business so for cool. Dummies. And I would just read like books on my break. And then, so I think all of those things, being a piano teacher, I learned how to teach people with an instrument, you know, and the instrument now is my makeup.
Yeah.
And then through Panera, I was teaching about customer service, and I would listen to the customer in the beginning, and I would say like, oh, if they were really hungry, they would look above me and they would be like, I want blah, blah, blah. Or I need, if they said I need, I'm like, I gotta get this girl's hungry.
Yeah.
Because if they say need, it's a necessity. If they want to try something new, they're not that hungry, but they just want to tickle their taste buds.
Yeah.
So I learned how to differentiate need and want and customer service. And then through doing photography, videography, and teaching piano, all of it foreshadowed my career and what I'm doing now to gain a better business. Because, you know, being a teacher to student, I learned how to have that dialogue between me and a consumer. Yeah. And then furthermore, and working in a band, in a, you know, a music band, how to be a team player.
Yeah.
And I think that's what helped me grow as a business entrepreneur.
Isn't it so funny looking back? I know I do this all the time. It sounds like both of you do too. Of looking back at all the little skills that you've acquired and all the little random jobs you've worked and things you've done and interests you've had and how they all circle back and like are so essential to who you are now or what you do now.
Right. Oh yeah. Right. And I think a lot of people who are working those jobs, like how you started working at Panera, or like I worked as like a summer camp counselor, and you're working those jobs and you're like, and you worked at Starbucks, you're working those jobs and you're like, oh, I just need to get out of here and do something that's really going to help me. And it's like, you can pick up skills on that job and learn stuff on your own that is gonna prepare you so that when you get to that point where you have an opportunity, you really take advantage of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, and also I feel like it's kind of like an important humbling thing to start out in a job that you don't love.
Yeah.
So that you can be like, you know, no matter like the hardest like 14-hour shoot day we have will never be as like mentally hard as it was for me like working at the Starbucks right next to all of the studios in Hollywood where like the PAs would come in, right, or like Justin Bieber would come in and then everyone would like freak out. Like I feel like I'm so fulfilled, and so it's nice to be able to like look back and kind of like humble yourself a little bit of like, okay, cool. Like, we're doing it like a 14-hour shoot, but like, we're in LA, it's air conditioned, we have craft service. Right. Like, I feel like it's nice to have that beginning to gain skills from it, but also to like put yourself in your place sometimes.
Yeah. Right, like, no, for sure.
Hey, I'm really lucky to be here. And like, it could be a lot worse.
Like, if you're watching and you feel like you're having like the most shitty day, like, you have a phone you're watching on. You have a computer you're watching on. You had a charger to plug your piece of technology. Not people have phones or can afford smart devices or even have the time to have social media because they're busy working four jobs. But for you, if you're sitting here on this podcast, be thankful that you have the time and the finances to pay your bill, get some Wi-Fi, and watch us. Like, you just really have to think about where you're coming from, what you're doing, and the skills that you've acquired. Because that's what my mom has taught me. There's always going to be someone that has it worse than you.
Yeah.
And I think for me to give back or just put more of that vibe and energy out there really helps me move on in a good space.
Totally.
Yeah.
How has it been for you being in like the depths of the beauty industry?
Yeah.
Because I feel like we're kind of like
we're on the outskirts.
We're on the outskirts of like, we'll still go to beauty events because we're like in fashion. And so I feel like it's kind
of hokey pokey.
Exactly. It like gets lumped in, but like we aren't doing like serious makeup tutorials. Yeah. We aren't, you know, like we're not doing necessarily like makeup sponsorships that regularly. Mm-hmm. So how's it been for you like being in the beauty industry?
On what degree, what aspect of it?
Do you have any like interesting stories about
from a business point, from a drama standpoint, from like what do you guys,
let's say from an influencer standpoint, and being like a unique voice in the industry. Mm-hmm. Have you ever had any experiences, especially like when you were up and coming, that changed the way that you think about what we see on our screens when we're watching these influencers or these celebrities, and that change the way that you think about it?
Also, like, sorry to interrupt. I was gonna say, we're trying to like get the tea because like we want to like hear your experience, but also don't feel like you have to like say names or like we're trying to get any like drama.
No, I love it. From an influencer business standpoint, what was an aha moment for me was early on, there was one brand that was sponsoring two of my friends.
Okay.
And so one was sponsored one post for one rate.
Yeah.
The other influencer was sponsored commission based.
Okay.
So same exact brand, same promotion, and I studied the two at the time. Yeah. And I was like, "Oh, I wonder who's going to make more money." And you know, but so then the one influencer did the deal, made that money, cashed out. The other influencer continued to promote the brand authentically, post after post, here's my code, here's my kit, you know, here's my here's your discount, and then of course, yeah, you know, in turn get commission, and that's how, you know, we live. And because there's an incentive for both the consumer and also the influencer. Yeah. But then at the end of the day, you know, this other influencer that was doing commission based was making 10, 20 times more than the one post that my other friend had done.
Yeah.
And made a lot of money. But that showed me that you have to build a beautiful relationship and long-term relationship with your viewer, because yeah, they are, yeah, the consumer. Because I call this the holy trinity of beauty. There's you, there's the brand, and then there's the consumer, and they have to work in tandem to create the Holy Ghost and the Holy Spirit to make to make the banks come alive, girl.
That's
so, can I get an amen?
Amen.
but then if you break the holy trinity, then you become an isosceles triangle, and it's, yeah, just like the brand becomes the voice, or then you become the voice, or then the consumer becomes the voice, and then it gets out of control. But you have to have this balance. So for me, it's public record out there that I've partnered with Benefit for so many years. Yeah. I'm one of their longest partners ever, influencer wise, yeah, but organically I've honestly loved the brand. Thank,
yeah,
you.
By the way, that's so awesome.
Thank you. And it's crazy because, you know, I was in the midst of becoming this budding influencer, and then it just became so big, and I've, yeah, just exclusively announced their concealer launch by myself with them. So it's really, really cool. But another story too that is just really, really crazy. I was invited on a trip, mm-hmm, and then I didn't have a passport. So I lied to Benefit that I had a passport, but then my manager was like, I need your passport. And then I was like, oh my God. And then I was like, I'll have my, it was a Wednesday and the trip wasn't the next Wednesday. So I was like, when's my passport? So then she's like, we need your passport, Patrick, today. And it was Wednesday. And I was like, oh my God, the brand's going to cancel me, this and that. So I had called the embassy to expedite a passport. And they're like, when are you traveling? And I was like, Wednesday.
Yeah.
And they're like, come on Tuesday. And I was like, what can I tell them? What can I tell them? God gave me a light bulb that day, because I was like, okay, I'm going to buy a real ticket to the Bahamas on Saturday. So I drove to Atlanta all day on Thursday. I bought a real ticket to the Bahamas, a one-way ticket to the Bahamas for Saturday. So then when I went to the embassy from Orlando, I drove up to Atlanta, from Orlando to Atlanta, 8-hour drive. And I was shaking because it was like Friday. I drove all day Thursday, went 5, 6 a.m. to the embassy to Atlanta. And I had prayed and I was like, if this is meant to be, this is going to change my life. Yeah. And this is my first trip with Benefit. So I was at the embassy like shaking like this. I was like, here's my proof of travel. I'm traveling tomorrow. And I technically was, because yeah, I bought a ticket for Saturday. So then as soon as I got my passport, 7 a.m., I got the stamp on in my passport, and then I sent this picture like this to my manager, and that little picture changed my, and Benefit knows this, I spoke to them, and I sent them my passport, and that was my first trip with Benefit back in 2014 to the Bahamas. That and I was the awesome. I was the smallest influencer on that trip.
Wow.
I was the only boy, and I was the smallest influencer on that trip, and it changed my life.
How big was your channel at the time?
Oh, not even, maybe like 100.
Wow.
Yeah, 100 or so.
That's crazy. So you really felt like this trip was I think we've all had a couple of those moments where it's like, this changes everything. That was your moment.
Mm-hmm. When I tell you, I thought my car was not going to last from like Orlando to there. It was just so crazy. And then as soon as I went to the Benefit trip, things started happening. I had landed the competition in the Face Awards. I made it to the top six. If you were in the top six, thank you. Wait, if you made it to the top six, you got $10,000. And I was like, oh my gosh, I'm going to move to LA with my $10,000. It's not a lot of money. It will not get you a lot here in LA. So I was like, okay, I'm going to get that prize money and I'm going to go. I went to LA right after that. I had landed my campaign for nail polish with Formula X and Sephora. I was the first boy in Sephora with a campaign with nails.
So awesome.
And it was so many blessings after blessings, yeah. But I had learned the work ethic of being a freelancer, a freelance makeup artist, yeah, being a piano teacher, working really freaking late. I would edit mm-hmm. videos until like 4 or 5 a.m. My dad would get upset at me because I would be at home on the computer till like 7 a.m.
Yeah.
And he would be coming down and he'd be like, what are you doing? And I'm like, I'm working. Like a little master, you know, like working. And then uploading at 8 a.m.
Yeah.
So it was just such a crazy, you know, journey.
And I think those moments of like hustle and then finally feeling that little bit of payoff, like, oh my gosh, I made it. Those are the things that like fuel us until we get that next, I'm here, mm-hmm. I did something really, really amazing moment. Mm-hmm. But I do think it's hard to balance, to have that work-life balance, mm-hmm. especially when you're a freelancer, because mm-hmm. I all the time find myself being like, I have to work hard. I have to, no one is gonna make things happen mm-hmm. for me. I have to do this. But at the end of the day, like, you can work hard and you can push yourself, but you can still take time mm-hmm. for you.
Yeah, for sure, balance. Even for having followed Jen Atkin, the founder of Way,
yeah.
she had a full-on breakdown. She was public about it on her story.
Oh, wow.
And she had to take time for herself. And I think in this day and age, when you're running not just your business, but your studio, your office, your yeah. social media, your network, she has a husband. She's married. And she, you know, you really have to take a break. But for me, I'm able to shift really easily when I have my makeup on and turban on
yeah.
and when it's off. And I know how to act and I know when to kind of like involve Patrick at, you know, an emotional level and when yeah. to involve Patrick Star. Totally. You know, even I will say dating is really hard too, because a lot of people,
yeah.
for me, I mean, y'all are very lucky, very blessed, but I'm so jealous. But for me, like, but for me, it's another, a whole nother episode and a whole nother topic for me to be a gay man, be a public figure, and also be feminine, but like gay. So that's like a whole other thing, because when I like meet guys, it's like they think that they're meeting Patrick Starr. Like, you're not gonna get this.
They're meeting Patrick, not Patrick Starr.
Yeah, I want them to meet Patrick, but then they say, "What's your Instagram?" And I'm like, "Patrick Starr," and they see the 4 million, and then they see me with Kim Kardashian on my last post. It's like, holy, you know, like yeah. that's not my life. You're not gonna be a real person. Yeah. Yeah, that's really
Wait,
hard.
Oh my gosh, can we talk about that? Because mm-hmm. I think that's so interesting.
Girl, I said this is another episode. It's just gonna be really hard. Yeah, it's hard.
Because I think, like we were talking right before we started filming, mm-hmm. I think that part of the awesome part about this podcast and like mm-hmm. starting to have guests on and guests of like different backgrounds than us and different like in different stages of lives. And I mean, you're in LA mm-hmm. dating mm-hmm. and like trying to navigate the whole like do you want someone who's completely not an influencer? Like, how do you navigate like people understanding your job but like not trying to like get clout from you?
That is so hard.
That is hard.
Yeah. It's hard. First of all, the other hot topic that I wanted to bring up is like every influencer thinks they have to move to LA to make it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That is an every time, because you know I do manage these yeah. younger influencers, like I have to move to LA, it's not happening for me, there's so many events. Why don't you open up a Snapchat account and a Twitter and grow your social media? Because yeah. yeah. I didn't move to LA until I was like 800,000. These yeah. kids are worried about moving to LA without even a YouTube or a very, wow. very small YouTube channel now. But it's not mm-hmm. practical and it's not sustainable financially for you to have move to LA where rent is thousands of dollars. I was living in a 600 square foot studio for $2,000 a month.
Yeah, jeez.
And I'm a big girl. I was filming in my kitchen. I was literally filming in my kitchen. And it's really, really hard.
Kyle and I just moved down to San Diego in January. Mm-hmm. I guess that's over like half a year ago now. Wow, that's so crazy. It feels like yesterday. Anyways, but we lived in North Hollywood for the last like 4 years and he lived there even longer than I did. And so it's the same thing of, like, there, LA is such a different place, and I will say that, like, there are certain perks of being in LA mm-hmm. if you want to be in entertainment. Like, mm-hmm. this is kind of where it's happening.
And but now you want to start a family and grow your family.
Well, and even, like, for us working, it's so nice. Like, today we just drove up from San Diego. It took us, like, an hour and a half. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So easy. So worth it, you know?
I cannot tell you, the first question that most people ask me who are also in the industry is, like, oh, you live in San Diego? When are you moving into LA? It's not, are you going to? Are you thinking about it? It's when. Mm-hmm. Because I think there is this idea of like, if you come to LA, you're gonna make it. Mm-hmm. And I think you can make it from anywhere. And that's the cool thing about YouTube. Right. It's like, you can do it
you
from anywhere.
You literally can, because you know what's so funny? It's like, for me, having come from Orlando, Florida, I was like, specifically to beauty, I was like, oh my God, I feel like I need to move to LA. I need to move to LA. But I was like, hold up. Jaclyn Hill's from Florida. Yeah. Promise Fawn is from Florida. Michelle mm-hmm. Fawn is from Florida.
Yeah.
Nicole Guerrero is from Florida. And so is Patrick Starr. So.
Well, and the thing is that YouTube can be consumed anywhere. Yeah. Like, we talk all the time about, like, so many people watch, like, her videos on their phones.
Mm-hmm.
like on their way to work playing in the background, specific, you know?
I think it's specific to people that are more popular on their Instagram and they want to have more. I think that's where they're coming from is because when they have stories and they want to post their events and they want to go somewhere, they're not really producing as much YouTube content, but daily content, which is what they're trying to aspire to commit to content wise, is going to events, going to this, going to that from a social standpoint. And well, Instagram is heavy.
I also will say for a long time, I felt like I had to go to these fashion and beauty and makeup events because it like validated me. Like if I'm invited, of course I have to go. Mm-hmm. And I think it took me a long time to realize like, you don't have to go to everything. And like,
also you're not getting paid to go to them most of the time. Like, it's just like a networking
fun
thing.
When I tell
you
it is so expensive, oh my God, my assistant here will just slap me across the face because I buy clothes even for the airport. You know, if I get like airport content or lookbooks, it's so expensive because I'm like, I got to buy all these different tops so I can at least have a different look.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, and I can't even imagine these fashion bloggers. Like I was at Fashion Week last week and I'm like, how do these girls sustain with all this expensive fashion and look nice? And I'm over here in my $3 yard fabric on my head, like.
That's the main reason I've never been to like Fashion Week or any of those things. The only way I would go is if I was invited by a brand, because that would probably cost me, after travel, outfits, everything, I'd probably be like 10 grand.
Yeah.
And it's like, I could invest 10 grand into my channel in such a better way. I could do, like, think about the amazing video I could do with 10 grand. Or like, I could get new equipment, or I could, you know, rent out a studio set or something like that. And, you know, some people go to those events and go to places like Fashion Week and they really, the investment pays off because they meet people or they make these connections. But for me, I'm like, I think because I'm not at that point where I'm like, I'm not going to get invited to all these big shows.
Right.
I'm just not. Yeah. And I'm fine with that. So for me going, maybe that would validate me a little bit. I'd be able to post, look at me, I'm at Fashion Week. But it's not going to be the worthwhile investment on my channel.
Yeah, I think overall, if you're wanting to make a big move or put in a lot of money, whether it's $1,000 or $10,000, you have to imagine like the end goal. Because I was speaking to a marketing executive and I said, how do you look at marketing dollars? Do you guys look for visibility? She says two things. You either get a return of investment or you get the visibility.
Yep.
Because I always wondered what brands got out of sponsoring like prank channels.
Yeah, right.
But they get visibility because they get millions of views. But if you partner with someone like me, I'll sell you millions of units.
Yeah.
You know, worth of things. So for me, I think with any move that you make, for me at Fashion Week, I went because I knew someone that was an executive there.
Right.
There was a YouTube event and there was obviously KKW's event. Yeah. So there
and
was like
it's paying off.
Yeah,
for you.
There was an end goal as far as content and relationships for me to do those things in a genuine, authentic way. And you really have to take a step back and see if these decisions are worthwhile long term.
How was Fashion Week for you? Because I feel like just looking at your Instagram, like you had the craziest, most beautiful looks.
Oh, thank you. First and foremost. Thank you.
I feel like you were constantly posting like at the coolest shows. Like, is it like truly as glamorous as it seems?
Tell us, peasants. Is it everything it seems to be?
When I tell you, it happens so fast. Like, you're like, did I just get ready for 4 hours for like 10 minutes? Literally, you get there, the photographers are crazy. It just snap, 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 snap. And then it just like, you watch these 50 models walk down a runway and it's done.
And that's it.
And then on to the next show or back to the hotel to change your outfit. It's such a frenzy. Like, I get so glammed up for such a little thing. And then I feel like that outfit was just seen for, like, not even an hour. You know,
so
whereas,
amazing.
Like, you know, I was watching your Get Ready, you know, for BeautyCon, like, your fittings and your makeup and, you know, everything. And it was just like, oh, my God. But you had, like, the whole day to wear it, you know?
Yeah.
Whereas, like, oh, my God, I have this beautiful outfit. It was custom made. And I gotta take it off, you know. It was just like,
so
damn,
crazy.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
It's, yeah, it happened so fast. But
what's the prep work like for that? Like, do you? Because I know you talked about like making some of your own clothes and like being a designer. So do you have to like hire multiple stylists and have like so many assistants and so many people like helping?
Oh my gosh, it's crazy. It's really
like,
crazy.
I feel like just the logistics of that is insane.
No, literally for my calendar, I have events planned until December. So I pinpoint where. it's kind of like a madman with a push pin and the map. Like, where do I get what outfit?
We're the same, yeah.
Like, where can I flex extra dollars for this outfit, for that, you know, and stuff like that. But it's crazy.
That's so crazy.
Yeah.
I know. We were looking because I was like, okay, so, like, we're shooting on Monday. And I was like, he's with Kim Kardashian. like 2 days ago, and then Fashion Week. And then I was like, is this happening? Because I feel like you're very busy.
No, I love it. I love it.
I'm so happy. I know. I feel like we're the same way, though, where we map out so far in advance. We were just talking in the car about how, like, we know exactly what days we're working at least 2 months in advance.
Yeah.
Always.
And that's why I admire you so much, because I really admire people who not only are doing important things in the industry, but also have that business side on the back end.
It's work at the end of the day. As much fun as it seems, it's work. You clock in, you clock out. When you clock into work, you know, let's say it's Panera. How many sandwiches are we making today? How many salads are we making today? How many coffees are we selling today? Make sure the bathrooms are clean, X, Y, and Z. How many bread rolls are we making today? How many soups? So I have to think, how many outfits, how many turbans are we going to make? How many lashes do I need to buy? How many nails do I have on my hand left? You know, so I'm literally looking at everything.
Right.
So.
Well, and it's hard because I feel like both of you guys go through this of you're like Patrick Starr, but you also work for Patrick Starr. Like, you're Sierra Schulze, but you work for Sierra Schulze.
I always make jokes because, like, there's Sierra Schulze Incorporated, the business, and then there's Sierra, the person. And so, like, when I'm on a family vacation and everyone's like, oh, yeah, I asked my boss for Monday off, I'm like, yeah, my boss is such a bitch. Like, she never gives me time off. Like, homegirl expects me to be working on vacation. But it's true, because you're Patrick, but you work for Patrick Starr.
I would call every day off, but the guy behind the camera is like, no, you have
to. You know. Well, and it's hard because I feel like balancing that line is such a difficult thing, especially when being an on-camera personality, like, you have to be fed, you have to be hydrated, like, you have to, like, have your nails done, do all this stuff that kind of seems like it's self-care, but at the end of the day, like, your talent. And so it's hard when you're also, like, producing.
But you're also
and, like,
CEO and presidents and boss.
And then I'm checking my emails and I'm having to approve things for my taxes. And then I'm having to, like, and when you're not just the on-camera personality, you're also the CEO. You have to have your hand in everything. And I think for a while I thought, okay, if I get to this point of success where I can have an assistant and have a tax person and have a financial manager, then, oh my gosh, my life will be so much easier because it'll be off my plate.
But you know what? You're learning every aspect of it, too, which makes you such a smarter CEO. Because for me, when I was working at Panera and this dishwasher boy was working with me at the time, I had left and done Mac and done YouTube. And when I came back to visit, he was now the GM of that store. But I was like, why and how? And then I studied it and I was like, okay, he was washing dishes. He was fixing the oven. He was fixing the dishwashing machine.
Yeah.
He was scrubbing the toilets.
He learned everything.
He learned everything. And I was like, oh. Of course he's a manager, because if something goes wrong, he knows how to do that. And I said, for me, I was my own fake manager when I started.
I did that too. I made a fake email.
Yeah, I had a deep voice and everything.
Her name was Celia.
Yes.
I'd be like, hello, this is Celia.
You guys were both editors.
Yeah, you're
your own
editor, your own PR, your own assistant.
You were scheduling like videographers and photographers. And
yeah, but for me at the end of the day, I think it just helps that, you know, I'm able to, you know, direct and because it's your name at the end of the day, but you're also able to construct your career at, you know, with your own voice.
And being that, like you said, like, I know how to edit, I know how to, like, itemize all of my expenses on my taxes, it's then easier for me to, like, communicate with the people who are doing those things now, where like, I can talk to my editor and be like, hey, can you do this effect, because, like, I know how to do it. And it sucked staying up till 4 a.m. editing, but now I feel like I'm better for it. Okay, well, I feel like that's a good place to end it.
Yeah, it was so fun. It was so great talking to you.
Thank you.
I could just talk to you for hours and hours.
I know.
Thank you. Well, now we are officially friends.
I know.
You guys, woo-hoo! There's proof of it. And any questions that you guys have and anything, my door is open. My phone is open to both of you. And
thank you.
All these amazing girls are so awesome.
Oh my gosh,
great energy. It's just like, for any of my viewers, you guys are just so badass. And hopefully better things will come out of this and, you know, event wise. And I'm so honored to have met you both.
Thank you. Oh, and thank you for everything that you're doing in the industry and for everything that you're doing on and offline. You're just a wonderful person. So
thank you
so much. And thank you guys for watching. We will see you next time with another new episode. Give us 5 stars on Apple Podcasts and subscribe to the channel. Okay, bye.
Bye.